Rebecca, how'd you first get interested in music?
You know, I have always been a singer. I mean, even since I was a little tiny kid, some of my earliest memories are walking around my neighborhood as a child, just kind of singing at the top of my lungs to no one in particular. And it just sort of developed from there. I took up, you know, guitar as a kid and started, you know, playing and singing. And I just sort of always knew it's what I wanted to do. It's what makes me the most happy.
What were some of the milestones as you picked up your guitar and started playing and singing as a kid?
Well, I would say that when I was 12 or 13 years old, I got my first guitar and I learned how to strum some chords. And I kind of learned how songs are put together. And one huge milestone, it sounds so simple, but it took a lot of practice, was being able to sing and play at the same time. You know, it's the kind of thing that I had seen so many people do, and I knew it was what I wanted to do, that I was really surprised the first time I tried to do it, and it was difficult, and it required a lot of practice. So I worked on that for, you know, weeks and weeks, and finally could get through all the chord changes without looking down and sing at the same time as moving my hands, and I just felt so accomplished and happy. And I would say the next milestone was probably, you know, when I wrote my first song and then performed my first song and then wrote a song that I felt was maybe a good song. And, you know, just kind of kept, there have been milestones like that, you know, ever since.
What was one of the first songs you felt was honestly a good song that you wrote?
You know, when I was 13, I was very proud of a song I wrote called Sexy Stranger, which I can't believe now. My friends still request it at shows just to torture me.
It's nice to have friends.
Oh, yeah.
Fast forward to today. You've had a really interesting experience living in your car for a period of time as you toured. How'd you come to make that decision?
You know, the long roundabout answer is that I went to college for audio engineering. And when I graduated from school, I worked for a year as a recording engineer. And I also, at that time, started working on my first CD. So when the CD came out, I would go on tour for a little while and then come home and work for a few months and save up enough money to pay my rent for when I went back out on tour. And I did that for about a year. And then I decided in this stroke of genius that I could afford to tour full time if I didn't have to come home and save up money for that pesky rent. So I eliminated my rent. I put all my stuff in storage and just hit the road full time. And, you know, I think looking back, I think maybe my math wasn't 100% accurate, but I'm glad I didn't know that, because if I had known what it would really be like, I might not have had the gumption to just go for it. But next thing I knew, I was just living on the road. And, you know, I mean, that's a euphemism, I would say. I certainly was never, like, sleeping, you know, in cardboard boxes under highway bypasses or even really in my car, which people often assume. But I was couch surfing and crashing in whatever free or cheap place I could find every night for years. And as my career has progressed, the sleeping accommodations have gotten a little nicer, although I'm still no stranger to a good comfy couch or futon. And over the course of the last 5 years, for about 2.5 of those years, I've had an apartment or a room in an apartment. And for another 2.5, I've just been floating out on the road kind of permanently on tour, like a permanent house guest, basically.
What do you consider the best part of floating out on the road? What's the best aspect of it and the toughest?
You know, the best aspect of it is that I get to meet so many incredible people. It's really, for me, it really affirms my belief in the goodness of humanity. And that sounds really corny, but something I've been really grateful for recently is just the sheer number of amazing and beautiful people that I've gotten to interact with that I would never cross paths with, I would never know existed if I were staying still in one town or even just traveling a little bit. And that has just enriched my life so much, just meeting so many interesting people with beautiful stories. And, you know, I see people day after day doing wonderful things for other people, and it just makes me incredibly happy. Probably one of the hardest parts of being on the road is learning how to use a different shower every day, or every time I shower, every time you stay with someone, you got to figure out, you know, if you pull the thing or push the thing, is left hot, is right hot, you know, and that's challenging and gets a little tiresome.
Learning to sing and play the guitar at the same time was probably no less challenging than this.
Exactly.
Before we get to Circus Heart, our audience is not going to forgive me if I don't ask you what it was like to perform Come As You Are on The Voice. What was that like for you?
Oh, it was terrifying. terrifying. It was so scary. Man, it was exhilarating. And looking back, it was really an incredible experience. And I am just so proud of myself that I did not fall apart in the moment, because it was, I'd never felt that kind of intense pressure on one performance before. And I mean, honestly, it was the scariest thing I've ever done. And I've jumped out of an airplane before. I went skydiving for my 19th birthday. And that was less frightening than singing for 90 seconds on The Voice. That, it was so scary.
What about it is the most terrifying?
You know, I've thought about this a lot. And, you know, prior to performing on the show, I had already been supporting myself on the road, performing every night for 4 years. And, you know, I've played over 1,000 shows. And what made this one so different, I think, is that it was judgment-based. Obviously, that's the cornerstone of the show, is that they're listening to you sing and they're passing judgment on you. The whole audience, though, is also judging you. They're, because they, everybody kind of, as the auditions are unfolding, all the audience members are thinking, is this person better than the last person, worse than the last person? Would I turn around for this person? Why does this person get to be on TV and not me? You know, like, you can feel that energy, not to sound like a total hippie, but, you know, when you have hundreds of sets of eyes all pointed at you, all spinning their wheels, comparing you and judging you, that energy comes to you. And normally when I'm performing, I'm getting energy from the audience that I then give back to them with my performance. But in this situation, I was dealing with an audience of people that were, you know, they would have been equally happy if I had delivered the performance of a lifetime or if I had just vomited all over myself out of sheer fright. Because either way, it's good television. And that's a very strange situation to perform in.
We should add that you had two judges turn around.
Yeah, and I honestly, I couldn't have been more happy with the feedback I got from all of the judges. And Christina Aguilera is one of the best voices on the planet. And I mean, honestly, I could see myself in an alternate reality picking her, but I'm just so intimidated by her big, amazing voice. I didn't know, you know, I made a snap judgment and decided to work with Adam because I felt like as a rock singer-songwriter, he was more similar to me as a folk singer-songwriter. But I was incredibly flattered by both of their attention and their kind words. I mean, it was a highlight for sure. It was an incredible experience.
Spent 7 seasons in the minor leagues just waiting for the show. Work a day of eight, you might say it's the dumbest job.